Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back at 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. I'm excited about having two of my good buddies on the show together for the first time. They know about each other, but I don't think they've actually met each other yet, but we're going to fix that right now. William Dunkelberg, ladies and gentlemen, is chief economist, and you know both of these guys. Bill Dunkelberg is the chief economist for the National Federation of Independent Business, but his day job is as a professor of economics at Temple University, former department head there for many years at Temple. Bill, welcome back to the show. Are you there, Bill?
Yeah, I'm
there
here.
You go. Hi, Bill. And then we also have Richard DeKayser, who is chief economist and senior vice president of National City Bank. And Richard DeKayser has been with us many times before. He's done the Fed Watch show with us before, and he's our good friend, too, and longtime, as Bill is, both are longtime members of our Brain Trust. Richard DeKayser, welcome back.
It's good to be here.
It's good to have you back. Say hello to Bill.
Good morning, Bill.
Richard, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
And I know that that both of you guys know each other's work. You've seen each other in action, but actually maybe not have met. And we're going to fix that today. Bill Dunkelberg, ladies and gentlemen, and the NFIB have been conducting a survey of small businesses for now in their 31st year. And Bill, you and I've been covering your report now for 4 or 5 years every month on the show, and the new issue is out for, I guess, for February, right?
Right, February survey.
The February survey is out, and that's what we want to talk about are the key issues about this survey, and then I want to get, as we talk about this, we're going to get Bill to tell us a little bit about what the survey said, and then we're going to get Richard's thoughts on what that means from his perspective. First, Bill, why don't you give us a little bit of an overview of how the survey turned out?
Sure. Well, I guess the good news of the survey is that the good numbers we've been seeing since, August of last year continued to show up. We have our index of optimism above 100 now for 10 straight months. That's really a good sign that economic growth is going to continue. On some of the pieces that are important, we saw hiring plans fade from the December-January numbers, but still remain as high as we ever saw them, for example, in the 1980s expansion when we created 21 million new jobs, so that looks very good. And capital spending continues to be solid, but not spectacular. And inventory building, of course, is going to pick up a lot. The shelves are pretty empty out there, so those pieces of GDP all look pretty good for us, and that's good news.
Well, however, from January, that's the good news, and I don't want to rain on the parade, and it's not bad news, but the February numbers are not quite as robust as the January numbers.
Yeah, we had 2 months. Actually, December was the really hot one when we had the index go up to 105 plus. For some reason, here's what I think happened. I think that everybody was surprised by the 8% growth in the third quarter. And, of course, moving into the fourth quarter, I think small business owners said, wow, this is really heavy duty. We aren't ready for this. We need more inventory. We need more employees. We need to do some expansion and get some more equipment. So we saw in December a real spike in those numbers, and it held up in January, although faded in January from December. And then February went back to kind of, October numbers, which were great but not spectacular.
Right. Richard, in your role as with the National City Bank, I know you actually track Bill's report yourself in your own work. What do you think about these numbers?
Well, I think Bill described it perfectly. I'll use different words to say the same thing, but I think the economy has been going through just about at the turn of this year what I'll call a massive supply response. And what I mean by that is to say that very few people saw the economic recovery coming with the strength that it did in the aftermath of the Iraq War, and thanks to other events like massive mortgage refinancing and tax cuts and refunds. And all of that really gave us a peak of economic activity in terms of consumer demand during the third quarter. But some of the fallout from that was that because businesses did not anticipate it coming, they were selling merchandise out of inventories, which are now, as Bill mentioned, extremely lean, and they're doing some catch-up. So we really did go through this massive supply response just at the turn of the year, and we're catching up with that demand. So things appear to be simmering down a little bit, but I think the important thing to remember, again, as Bill mentioned, is that these aren't bad numbers. We're simply coming off of that very torrid switch in gears, and conditions remain fairly positive. From our side, just very quickly, in terms of banking kind of metrics, we do see loan demand, which has been abysmal for three consecutive years, beginning to improve. And interestingly, if you look at distinction between big and small businesses, it is small businesses that seem to be doing the better part of this. Though, in all fairness, part of the reason probably is because they can't go to Wall Street and
That's
issue
right.
bonds the like.
Well, but, without banks, small businesses without capital.
Amen to that.
Well, it's just a fact, you know, and that's the truth. I mean, we got to have our banks. There's no that's the only place we can get any serious, stable, regular, and hopefully affordable capital. Bill, but you know, back on your February thing, don't we need to just sort of take a chill pill during February? I mean, February is a dour, cold, bitter, poor sales. I mean, isn't that like typically like the worst month of the year for everybody, just about?
Well, that's probably true, but hopefully my numbers are seasonally adjusted, so we account for the fact that February might always be a downer.
You always
of course,
have
when
to
the
throw
weather
that seasonally adjusted in there.
Seasonals, the average seasonals, then you get some different answers. We did have some kind of worse weather performance in part of the country, and it showed up in part of the numbers in the first quarter, or will show up in the first quarter numbers. But we try to adjust for the fact that that's the case. But we're still looking okay, I think. Those are good numbers.
Every time, Richard, I think I found something that maybe I can catch Bill on. He always throws that seasonally adjusted thing in there on me.
Well, you got to do it. There are predictable patterns. It does snow and get cold in January, so you need to expect that things sensitive to that are going to suffer.
Right.
And I know it's a controversial issue, but I think it's the right thing to do, and there's no getting around it.
Well, I agree with you, but if you're a small business owner out there, it makes you feel better to say, it's February, what are you going to do?
That's it. Well, that's why hiring plans, for example, don't really pick up until April or May. That's
right.
A seasonal thing, and of course, we all spend lots of money in the fourth quarter every year, even though our incomes don't go up to match it. So that's, a seasonal increase in spending that is not predictable because our incomes went up. It's just the season, and so we do it.
Stand by, folks. Stand by, Richard and Bill. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about hiring. How are we doing, and is it going to get better? We're going to get Bill Duckerberg and Richard DeCaser to weigh in on this right after these messages. It's 20 after. Stay with me. We'll be right back. We're back. It's 23 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with two of our outstanding Brain Trust members, both outstanding economists, nationally recognized, internationally recognized economists. Richard DeCaser, who's chief economist for the senior vice president, chief economist for National City Bank, based out of Cleveland, Ohio, and also William Duckerberg, who is chief economist for the National Federation of Independent Business, the NFIB, and also a professor at Temple University. Bill, let's move over to one of the points in your economic trends research that you do every month, and let's talk about labor. Let's talk about the jobs situation. What's it looking like out there for small business?
Well, overall, it looks pretty solid. We saw job creation pick up in the fourth quarter, meaning that more firms hired workers than fired workers, and that's always good. So we ended up with net new jobs in our numbers. But that doesn't always square with some of the macro numbers that we get from the government. There are these two surveys. One is called the payroll survey, which says last year we lost 250,000 jobs. And then there's the household survey that we used to get the unemployment rate, and that says we gained about 1.6 million jobs last year.
Mm-hmm.
And the controversy, of course, is, where are the jobs? Are we really measuring them? Our numbers say that they're there. Certainly somewhere in between those two numbers ought to be the real number. We can't really increase output, you know, 6% at an annual rate, which we did in the second half of the year, and fire people. It's a service sector economy. Yeah, we're more productive, but we're not that productive. And then I did learn something last week that I found interesting, and that is that the BLS changed its methodology on the payroll survey.
BLS, like this. Lose the BLS.
The Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Right. Okay.
Normally, because the payroll survey is based on a sample of, say, 400,000 enterprises out there, firms, but, of course, that misses self-employment, misses the agriculture sector, and misses new firms being formed. And what the BLS did many years ago was to compensate for the mistakes they make by putting a plug number in every month of 140,000 jobs. Huh. And that's to cover really all the small businesses starting new jobs and so on that they couldn't cover in their survey. But sometime in the past months, I'm not sure when it is, they changed that plug from 140,000 to 38,000.
Huh.
Now, my math really quickly tells me that takes a million jobs out of the number for
right.
a year.
Right.
I don't know if the new methodology that they use to try to update their frame compensates for that. And that could explain this huge gap between these two surveys.
Mm-hmm. Richard, what do you think? You think he's on something?
I know he, well, I can't say I know it because unfortunately the facts are only in about a year after the fact in this particular case, but I absolutely agree. And to support that, I just want to remind listeners that this has been a chronic problem. It's nothing new. The basic problem is that the survey of 400,000 businesses only changes incrementally, very gradually are new businesses added to the survey list, but when you're at moments in the economy, in the business cycle, such as we are now, new business startups are happening at a ferocious pace, and they're not getting caught. They're not being captured. So job gains are occurring out there, but they're not being reported in these surveys, again, until 2 years hence, when they, 1 to 2 years hence, when they go back and fix all the numbers. Now, the problem is that this doesn't address the political environment we're in, where the numbers still look, at least superficially, to be worse probably than they are, and it being an election year, translating into calls for someone to do something.
Right. Well, and that's the thing that's really got me on my stump right now. As both of you know, I know it's an election year. I know things are heating up, and I know it's the silly season, and people are going to be saying a lot of things that are going to have to invoke a license, a certain amount of political license to be able to get away with it. But what upsets me is that we're not having what I consider to be an honest debate about what's really happening with jobs. And I don't care about Mr. Bush. I don't care about Mr. Kerry in terms of my point is that, you know, whatever happens to them happens to them. They can duke it out. But when politicians can't be honest about what's happening with jobs globally, in my opinion, when we've got to blame somebody because somebody doesn't have a job, then in my opinion, that is missing an opportunity to help people to get reoriented, to get retrained, and to turn their life in another direction. And I think it's hurting Americans by this dishonesty in the debate about jobs. Bill Duckerberg, what do you think?
I agree with that. It's really unfortunate that we have that kind of a situation. The politicians have a two-year horizon at best when they're in there. You know, they've got to do something in 2 years to get reelected. And the most important thing to people out there is jobs. And we know that one of the things that really drives consumer optimism, for example, is fear about the job market and whether or not jobs are going to be available. And this seems to be really running the agenda right now. The Democrats have seized on the payroll numbers and said, see, we're losing jobs, and, of course, the politics of that is we're shipping them all to China, which is not the case at all.
Right.
And there's pressure then to do something about that. The first piece of pressure is very worrisome, and that's protectionism. That is somehow stop, don't let these jobs go out, stop importing stuff, stop sending jobs overseas, you know, laws against that, or subsidies for keeping jobs here, which I'm not sure what that means. And that's not good. And then, of course, you've got other issues that the legislators have to deal with in order to get reelected come November.
Yes, and this whole issue has to be viewed on a global basis if we're going to really have an honest debate about this. And as both of you know, that's one of the things that I'm starting this year. We've already started. You guys are helping us with this, and that's to get the debate out about an honest debate about what's really happening with jobs. And when we come back, I'm going to give you guys both an opportunity to talk about that a little bit. And then we're going to move on to some other issues to cover about small business and the U.S. economy. 29 After. Stay with me. We'll be right back.
You're listening to a man whose work is never done.
In a job like yours, even when it's finished, there's always one more thing to do.
And his job is to make your job easier.
It's a very difficult job, and the only way to get through it is we all work together as a team. And that means you do everything I say.
He's Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 After. I'm Jim Blassingame, and I'm glad you're here. Richard DeKayser is our guest, along with Bill Dunkelberg, and Richard is with National City Bank. Richard, tell us a little bit about National City.
National City Bank is a major regional bank going from Michigan to Kentucky and Pennsylvania to Illinois, six states, soon to be seven with the inclusion of Missouri. A
couple of thousand branches, I guess.
A couple thousand ATMs, about 1,500 branches, and number one SBA lender in most of the states in which we operate.
Yeah, and Bill Dunkelberg is a professor at Temple University, but he's also the chief economist of the National Federation of Independent Business, the NFIB, an organization that I've been telling you about for a long time. And Richard, you want to tell us anything about NFIB?
I'm sorry, was that to me, Jim?
I'm sorry, Bill. I said,
but
I meant Bill. No,
I can
Bill's
talk about
guy.
It, too.
Bill's
the NFIB. I was hoping I was going to get an endorsement from Richard
Bill,
there.
Bill is the NFIB expert. See, I just do this sometimes to throw them off, folks, just to shake them up a little bit. Bill, go ahead.
You get that dead time. Well, NFIB, of course, has about 600,000 member firms nationwide, and our job is to look out for the interests of small business, not just in Washington, but in the 50 states as well. So we have a very busy and big staff, and we're in there trying to make sure that in the zeal to do the right thing, which is usually the wrong thing for these legislators, they don't forget about small business and how important small business is. They're producing over half of the private sector GDP and providing most of the private sector jobs.
I want to come back to the jobs in just again in just a little bit in a little bit later in the program. But what I want to do before we go any further, Bill, won't you take a moment and give us an overview of where you think small business is right now in the first quarter of 2004?
Well, we're looking pretty good right now. It looks like we're going to make a solid contribution to job creation. The plans, as we noted earlier, were as strong as we ever saw the hiring plans back in the 1980s, which was a 20 million job expansion, so that's very good. The numbers are a little low compared to those crazy years, 98, 99, 2000, but we got to stop benchmarking to that. That was unsustainably hot economy, to say the least. On the inventory side, we're going to add the inventories we need to. We're very low. More firms say inventories are too low than too high. That's really good. One out of five say now's a good time to expand facilities. That's a very good number. We like to see that. And at least a third of them expect the economy to be better 6 months from now, and that's mm-hmm. good news as well. So we're looking pretty solid going forward.
And Richard, as a banker that's one of the top SBA lenders in the country, that's got to be good news for you.
Well, it is. And I'll tell you what we've been seeing is that small businesses have been increasingly utilizing their lines of credit in large part because of this inventory restocking phenomenon that we're going through right now. But to a large degree, that's been offset by pretty aggressive pay downs. That is, firms came into large cash flows during the second half of 2003, which surprised them and were pleasantly so. But they've used a lot of that dough to pay down debt in some cases. So we've had this interesting situation where some firms have seen a great need for increasing borrowing to resupply inventories, and others have frankly been so surprised with their profits principally and tax-related impacts that they have been plowing it back in. So it's been pretty much mixed, but we see that shift changing now where borrowing is going to be dominating paying down in the first half of 2004.
Bill, should we... there's so much good news out there. Both of you have talked about some of the good news of small business. I mean, Richard, what you just said is really, really important good news for small business, and especially the cash flow comment that you made. And Bill, with all this good news out there for a sector that creates half of the economy of the United States, why when you listen to politicians, especially one half of the political debate, why are we hearing things that sound so bad? I mean, is it you know, where's the truth in all this?
Well, you know, I guess if you're running against the party that's an incumbent party, you have to find things that are wrong. So the opposition is looking at every place they can to find bad news. And quite honestly, about the only bad news number we have is the payroll survey number, mm-hmm. and it's totally inconsistent with kind of everything else we see happening in the economy, which ought to kind of wake us up to the problems maybe that we have with that survey. But you've got to be critical about something, and so the issues that it looked like it might be the economy, to quote somebody famous, the economy's stupid, but of course the economy's picked up very well now, and so going into the election that will be hot. So it's going to be jobs, and it's going to be outsourcing, and it's going to be Iraq.
When we come back after these messages, I'm going to ask Bill and Richard if they think staking a political claim on jobs is going to be a wise decision for 2004. 20 till. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with two of our outstanding members of our brain trust who happen to be world-class economists, William Dunkelberg and Richard DeKayser. And Bill Dunkelberg is chief economist for the NFIB, the National Federation of Independent Business. He's also with Temple University, professor of economics there, former department head there. And then Richard DeKayser is chief economist with the National Citibank. Richard, you want to give us a website, please?
Very easy. www.nationalcity.com.
And Bill?
For NFIB. Me, wdunk, W-D-U-N-K at AOL.com, and for NFIB and access to all our monthly reports, NFIB.com.
Yeah, you can go there and get this report, too, by the way. And also, you can find it on my website, because we post it every month at jbsba.com. Okay, here's my question to Richard, you first, and that is the Mr. Bush's economic stuff is baked in the cake. I mean, it's, what's going to happen is going to happen, but there are some holes in his economy that still left yet to be seen what it's going to look like in November. The Democrats are coming out against some of those holes. They're identifying and highlighting some of those holes, as we pointed out earlier. Who's going to be served best by the economy in terms of pure political points? Who's going to be served best in, let's say, the 1st of November?
Oh, I think clearly it's going to be George Bush. And the reason simply is that, to a very large degree, people do vote their pocketbooks. So if they're feeling optimistic about the economy and they're feeling optimistic about where it's headed, they tend to do the conservative thing and keep the incumbent in office. So the incumbent is George Bush, and there's almost complete unanimity amongst forecasters that 2004 is going to be a solid year. We haven't had a steady string of solid years, starting with recession 2001 and weak growth in 2002. But far more important than the overall picture, again, at least for election outcomes, is what happens in the run-up to the November election. And that looks very, very solid for the incumbent. And, you know, frankly, that's not happening by accident either.
Right. Bill, your thoughts?
Well, I think the economy, the pocketbook is usually what drives the vote, and the pocketbook is going to be working very well. If the opposition needed a good issue, it got the best one it could, and that's the jobs controversy, which we've, I think, discussed pretty well now. Mm-hmm. And I think that will evaporate. You know, the payroll numbers are going to start showing what's going on in the economy. We can't produce all this output without hiring people, especially in an economy that's a service sector type economy, where productivity is good, but it's not that good. So the economy is going to really support the incumbents, and I agree with Richard. I think that Bush will be surprisingly successful in the election.
But Ohio, your state, Richard, is a battleground state, and you guys have lost a lot of jobs. Is that, regardless of the economy, are all those jobs that have left Ohio not, is that not going to be a dangerous situation for Mr. Bush?
Oh, I think it is, and in fact, probably one of the greatest vulnerabilities is not the overall picture that we're seeing in the economy, but is the fact that many of these swing states, Ohio and Michigan being a couple, that is states that could swing either way and have a lot of electoral votes, have had a tougher time than has been the case nationally, principally because of our high manufacturing concentration, and because of that sector's disproportionate losses over the past couple of years. So I'm not suggesting that it's inevitable, but again, if you try and think ahead in time, 8 or 9 months, again, to Bill's point, we've got a job market which is improving and will likely improve further, and on balance, that tilts things his way.
What about the deficits, Richard? Now, you're a deficit hawk. You've written about it. Your March outlook that I have in front of me is the headline is Why Deficits Matter. You say cyclical. You said this on the show many times before. Cyclical deficits are usually good, but we've got structural deficits, and you're worried about them, aren't you?
Well, that's right. And I return to this theme often because I think it's important, not so much for where we are in the next year, but where we are in the next generation. And when you start getting old like we are, you start thinking along those lines. But the bottom line is a structural deficit is one which persists even after the economy has fully righted itself, even after unemployment has fallen and capacity operating rates and factories have risen to their averages. You continue to generate large deficits. And the latest numbers here tell us that we're in that situation with probably $2 to $250 billion deficits for a decade, at which point things really get worse. So,
and that's based on largely on the entitlements, Bill Dunkelberg, and the Mr. Greenspan weighed in on this recently, didn't he, in a comment about that?
Well, the entitlements get to be a real threat, of course, after the baby boomers start retiring. I think right now the big boost in the structural deficit has really come from a massive increase in what we can characterize as defense spending, part of that over in Iraq, and, of course, a bigger, much bigger piece, I think, when the dust clears, coming from Homeland Security, really an incredible amount of money going into that.
Do you guys characterize those as structural deficits?
Sure, because I think we'll have to keep spending. That's the problem, is it stays there. And when you increase your spending by $100 billion or whatever, and Richard might have a better number, $100 billion or more for these items alone, then you cut taxes, of course, you have a real gap between your expenditures and your revenue. And, of course, this was a real gimme deal bill that was passed this time for spending. We had, 7,000-plus special deals in that bill. You know, every state got some goodies somewhere, and I guess Alaska was the real winner because the senator from Alaska is head of the Appropriations Committee. But
stand by, Richard and Bill. We got to go to a break. One of the things, guys, everybody knows here at the table and around the world knows I'm no economist, but I think that our investment deficits are not in Homeland Security and in Iraq, I think we're going to wind up with a peace dividend that's going to be paying off for a long time. And that's my prediction. It's 10 till. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back at 7 till, and I want to take my hat off to Richard DeKayser, chief economist for National City Bank, and Bill Dunkelberg, chief economist for the National Federation of Independent Business. Take my hat off to both of you for helping us cover a lot of ground, for helping us make a lot of sense of this for small business owners. You know, we don't we focus so much on making payroll and growing our businesses. We don't always get to look at some of these other issues that you guys have helped us to understand so well today. And I thank both of you for that. Let's talk about the Fed is meeting this week, and they're going to be the FOMC, I should say, the Federal Open Market Committee is meeting this week, and they're going to be talking about the economy. And what I want to do is I want both of you to give us a short explanation of what you think they're going to be, what they're going to find on that table today when they meet this week, and what they're going to do about it. And I'm going to let you go first.
Thanks. I get to set up the straw man here, maybe. Well, the Fed, of course, has a great research staff. So they have more research assistants than Richard and I put together, and they follow the economy very closely. They're going to see a great economy out there, very solid. They're going to project growth to continue throughout the year. No real booby traps that we can see out there to prevent that. So they're going to be taking a very positive look at the economy. What they're going to do about rates, I think, is nothing. They won't change them because they really have kind of, they're trying to gradually move us in the direction by eliminating various words from the statements. They've made it clear that the rates, you know, Greenspan has said rates are too low, we're going to have to do it, and so we're all just guessing about which meeting they're going to start in and trying to figure out whether they're willing to raise rates in a, before the election or whether they'll wait till, you know, November, December to get it done. But clearly rates are going to be moving up, and it won't be damaging to the economy. In fact, if we don't move rates up, people may start to worry about inflation.
I think you're right. And Richard, I predicted that they would raise rates in the June meeting of this year and not anymore for the rest of the year. What do you think?
I think they're also going to start at mid-year, though I don't think they're going to – I think they like to avoid being in the game, so to speak, immediately prior to elections.
Right.
But they're absolutely not intimidated about acting during election years. And I'll remind listeners that in 1988, when the first George Bush was running for president, the Fed increased interest rates six or seven times, of course, taking off the 12 weeks prior to the election time. But they're not overly intimidated, but I think they'll just avoid the month or two around that time.
What do you think they're going to do this week?
I think they're not going to do a thing. I think they're going to sit on their hands. And one of the interesting things about being a Fed watcher is they've taken a lot of the guesswork out of it. The Federal Reserve over the years has been adopting a policy of increased transparency, which simply means that they use whatever public medium they have to basically tell us where they're heading. And what they've been telling us as of late is that they still remain preoccupied about inflation falling. Though, even though that risk is minuscule, it is nonetheless significant, so it causes them to keep interest rates low. But incrementally, they've been moving away from that position, and I think, frankly, in their missive we'll see on Tuesday, they're going to be indicating further movement away from that position, which conversely means moving towards an interest rate increase.
Well, and I don't think anybody needs to get there. I don't think any small business owners need to start wringing their hands over the possibility of a rate increase. I mean, for God's sake, Prime is at 4% right now in your bank, Richard, and you know, even those of us who, which most small business owners are premium borrowers, meaning that we borrow money at Prime plus 1, 2, 3, or 4, even you know, even Prime plus 2 or 3 is something we can dial that number into our projections, and we can make that work, especially, Bill, if, as you've reported, we can have a little pricing power.
That's right, and we've seen that. We've seen the net percentage of our firms raising prices go from -3, meaning more firms were cutting prices than raising, to a +13 in the February survey. So a little pricing power is back. It's showing up at the bottom line, which is good, of course. And you're right, interest rates are not that big of an issue. We could easily see a prime of 5 or 6, and that won't bother us.
And Richard, with all the investment and technology and all the efficiencies that we've learned how to create in the last 3 years, with pricing power holding and inflation kind of holding down a little bit, we're going to start to see profits that are really going to be good. And I think it's going to, for a lot of people and for a lot of reasons, and I think that's going to drive a lot of taxes too.
Well, yeah, profits have been fabulous for the past year, and actually I think the best of growth is behind us, though good news still remains ahead. But Jim, I want to squeeze in this point because I think it's very important for your listeners. Interest rates are cyclical. They go down when the economy weakens, and they go up when the economy is strong. The current environment we've enjoyed for the past couple of years isn't going to last forever, so if you're confronting these decisions about trying to lock in today's low long-term interest rates, you've probably got a window maybe of 3 months to try and close that deal. I'd encourage you to do so.
You heard it right here from one of our resident bankers. Richard DeCaser, thank you for being here. Good job today. Bill Dunkelberg, outstanding as always. Thank you to both of you. We appreciate it very much, and we'll see you next time. Bye, guys.
Take care.
Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Don't go away. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.